Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And it's really cool for me to now get to interview someone who was listening to Mixergy interviews as his company was being built. And the other thing that's cool about this interview is it's so different from the approach that many of the entrepreneurs that I've interviewed have taken. You've heard me say this before, that one of the commonalities that I've noticed in my interviews is entrepreneurs will notice a big problem in the world, will realize that it's a big pain point for people, and they'll create a business to address the pain point and solve it and make it better and capitalize on it. Today's guest says he explicitly did not do that. And he's a listener of mine long enough to know that that's what I look for in many interviews. And I appreciate that he's saying, I have a counterexample. That's not how we did this. We put down a list of criteria, and Perry, you can tell me if I'm getting this wrong, but Perry said, put down a list of criteria for what he wanted in a business and started thinking of businesses that fit those criteria and then found one that became a hit. And that's what today's interview is about. How did he get that list of criteria to turn into a company that today is doing really well and helping companies hire? His name is Perry Ustam. He is the founder of Recruity. Recruity is cloud-based software that helps you hire better. They help you place your ads, and more importantly, they help you manage the people who apply to work for your company in an intelligent way, one that just looks right and you get it as soon as you see the visual of it. I hope I can do it justice here in this interview, and one that allows you as a company to represent yourselves right and hire people who are a good fit for your business. So we'll find out how he came up with this idea and how he grew it, and it's all thanks to two sponsors. The first will help you host your website right. It's called HostGator. And the second will help you hire developers, but I checked it out with Perry. He's not thinking of them as a competitor at all, which I get. It's called TopTal. I'll tell you more about both those later. First, Perry, good to have you on here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for staying late. You said it's 7 p.m. your time. We're recording at 10 a.m. my time. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Amsterdam, and although it's evening time, it's lovely and sunny, as you could see.
I see that. So, yeah, you've got a whole lot of sun on your face.
It looks like I'm in Spain near the beachside, but I'm actually in the office in Amsterdam, and maybe the logo behind me proves
that. Yes, that will prove it. And I will say this, that I bet you by the time this interview is over, you're going to get darker and darker, so dark that we might need to turn the lights on. Hey, you know the first question I'm going to ask you, which is revenue. What are your revenues at Recruity?
Well, I can't share the exact details, but I'm very proud that with the minimum amount of funding that we had, because we only had a seed round in 2015 when we founded the company, we scaled up above $1 million a year in revenue and far above it by now. So we didn't take any funding, and we bootstrapped the business up to that point to give you a bit of an indication.
More than double the million? Is it more than 2 million?
I can't say that.
Okay, but the fact that you're pausing and I'm looking at your eye gives me a sense of it. And the reason I'm asking is we did a pre-interview with you about half a year ago, and at that point you told our producer we are hitting $1 million in revenue. So
right.
It gives me a sense of growth in the last half year or so. You've more than doubled the business. Fair to say?
Yeah, right. I can share some stats on that. We grow about 10% a month, and that's the growth we aim for as well. You know, it represents in customers, in revenue, but also in terms of staff, etc. That's the type of organizational growth that we aim for.
You have a co-founder in the business. How do you find your co-founder?
Founder2be.com, actually.
Founder2be.com. So it's
literally.
I never thought those things would actually work. What did you do on founder2be.com that got you a co-founder?
Don't say it's Grindr for business. It's
is it like Grindr for business?
Yeah, founder2be is a platform where two people to meet up and get to know each other. So I was actually looking for a counterpart, like an engineer, somebody to bounce ideas back and forth, because I know if I want to start a company, it will be an IT company. So actually I've been looking for people on get-togethers like hackathons and startup weekends, etc. Came across his website, made a profile. Paul started chatting with me actually on the platform, and we ended up actually meeting each other in the Netherlands. So he drove from Poland actually all the way to the Netherlands, spend a weekend, bounce ideas, and we figured out there was a great fit on the ideas that we were both had in mind, but also personally about what does a business mean to you. You know, what's your ambition and what do you want to sacrifice even maybe for a business?
What a great question. What are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to sacrifice for this business to be successful?
Well, maybe you need to sacrifice your social life a little bit. I don't think you need to pay if you pay too much value to your social life, I'm not sure if high-tech scale-up is the best place to be.
I see. Yeah, I can imagine you're there at 7 o'clock on an evening. You're definitely not going out for drinks. So, all right, you found him. And the first idea that you guys pursued, was it georun.com?
Yeah, exactly. 2012, we met up. We pursued GeoRun because it originated from the idea of we should do more with mobile games, mobile GPS games. Mm-hmm. So GeoRun is a concept that helps companies like brands build awareness around specific stores or locations or events, and then set up GPS games to attract people to this location. So think about a kind of Pokemon Go without the virtual reality. That's pretty much what it is. So we set up campaigns for ING Bank, for Bijenkorf, which is a warehouse in the Netherlands, but also for Samsung, we set up a game. So we did that for a couple of years, and then I think it was end 2014, we realized, okay, the games are fun. It was definitely a cool business, but not scalable in the way we wanted it to be. So we were looking for, we had 5-6 people in the team then, still working remotely. So we, from day one, we worked, you know, half the team in Poland, half the team in the Netherlands. But we figured there's much more we could do with the team. So we were not that happy with a business that centers around services and going from campaign to campaign. And this is when the idea of, you know, a more scalable B2B solution started popping up.
And you started writing a list of things that you wanted. You said, now we're going to be much more intentional about it. What was on your list?
Exactly. We said because I remember doing a deal in GeoRun that took 13 months to close. And we figured, okay, this is not the type of business we want to have. And this is when the idea of started off as saying, okay, you make a list, I make a list, write down the 15 commandments of an ideal scalable business, what we called it. I think I still have the list somewhere, actually. So we wrote down things separately and then combined the list into things like we should be able to sell to customers worldwide from day one. It should be pretty clear what the pain point is. So it shouldn't be, you know, have a whole lot of story around it. We should be able to put our finger at the pain, actually, for the process of selling it. Let's focus on an inbound sales process rather than having the need for outbound and calling, etc. We also wanted to stay below a certain monthly revenue pricing point, just to make sure that all the people in the company could actually have the credit card access to charge for it. So if you go above 300-400 a month, it's harder. You need to go through a certain chain of commands, of course. Mm-hmm. So these type of things, we listed them down and then started to look at, okay, what type of ideas do we like and could we work on as a team that we have now?
Okay. I like the thought behind this. It seems, though, that you still were thinking of a pain point. Even though you didn't start by discovering someone's pain, you did say, I want software that addresses a pain, right?
Right, yeah. Because it's much easier to sell aspirins, you know, if you know people have a headache, actually.
Got it. I'm looking at my notes here from the conversation with the producer. You specifically said, I did not start by trying to solve the pain that we encountered. Why was that important to point out? I know for me it's important because I don't want to send out the message that there's only one way to start a business by starting with a pain. I'm wondering why you wanted to be so clear and say, I didn't start by understanding pain.
Yeah, the pain is not in particular something typically you start a business because, or not typically, often businesses are started because there's a certain frustration. People want to change something in the market. Mm-hmm. I think we had a different route. We did it the other way around. We said, what would our ideal company look like? We are serving people international. It's a relatively small team. So we said with about 30 people, we should be able to come up to a decent size of revenue. Not that you have to scale the team according to the client size, like agencies have to do often. Right. So we wanted to have a scalable model in that perspective and then started working backwards to, okay, I guess in the end, you know, what's a pain that we can help solve? I think that's the essence of what are people willing to pay for. There needs to be a certain pain, of course. But it wasn't that we started from the pain. It actually was the other way around.
I see. And so you made a list of things and you said, look, you know what? Maybe CRM, right? Contact software. Maybe it's going to be brand monitoring software. What else did you consider that fit within the criteria?
Yeah, quite a crowded market as well, actually. A CRM software for sales. We looked at, you know, what process do we use? What software do we use? What's something we could do better, actually? What should be done differently? Also, we really like the market of brand monitoring software that you have Google Alerts, I would say, in the extreme. We also looked at affiliate software, still an interesting market, and not a lot of good affiliate software out there. So I guess the common area was B2B software. So we figured, okay, that's the area we want to be at. Don't B2C that, like we did before, but really B2B. But those are typical examples we looked at.
Why? What's the problem with B2C?
Well, GeoMail is very B2C focused, but often you end up with a two-sided marketplace. So you have to have enough consumers on it for in order to be attractive for businesses and in the way around as well. So we didn't want to start with a kind of two-sided marketplace where you could potentially end up with the need of a lot of funding to get one of the two sides going. So we wanted to really start lean and say, okay, let's build an MVP, finance it ourselves, get 20, 30 customers on it, and then start scaling up. And don't even think about funding before you know the funding is going to be used for scaling and not for building the product. So a lot of B2C, it doesn't work out like that.
Because B2C is also harder to monetize, right? It's much harder to sell to consumers. A business won't think too much about spending $20 a month. It's nothing. But an individual will think for a long time about spending $2 in the app store, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And because if you're going to build a sustainable business, you want real revenue to come in from customers.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's healthy. We looked at, I know a lot of startups from the Amsterdam network, like Rockstar Accelerator, Startup Bootcamp. You had a lot of, there's a lot of stuff going on here in terms of startups. But yeah, it's a big misconception that if you build something awesome, that people actually are willing to pay for it. And that's what we actually saw in GeoRun. Like, games were cool. People liked it. Everybody said, like, wow, it's so much fun, the type of games you're building. But who's in the end paying for it? Then people drop off.
That is painful. Okay. I'm wondering why you gave up on the other ideas. Why not brand monitoring, for example? Why not a CRM?
Could do. I guess we were more comfortable about this particular software because we felt we have the ideas, the team that could build it and also build something new in terms of what's already out there. And also my co-founder, Paul, he had been working on a similar software during his studies when he was doing some freelance work of coding. It wasn't exactly the software we have now, but it was also in the recruitment sector. So he knew the industry a bit. He knew the customers that in the end the company was selling to. So there was some familiarity with the business, yeah.
I see. What's the pain here? Because I'll be honest with you, when I hear about another app for hiring, another way to hire people, I think, man, Perry's got all these freaking competitors. I've interviewed tons of your competitors, guys who've made boatloads of money and have boatloads of funding. How are you? Yeah. What's the pain that all these other guys didn't solve that you said, I'm going to come in and I'm going to address?
Yeah, it's a good one because when we researched the market 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we saw all these competitors. We saw, hey, typically businesses go to blue oceans. You want to be something new. This is pretty as red as it could get from a market perspective. But the question is, first of all, could you do it better? Could you do it differently? And of course, how big is the market? Because there's a reason why this market is big. There's also a reason why there are, I think, 1,200 Italian restaurants in Amsterdam, and a lot of them are actually still doing fine. So I'd like to turn the question around by saying, first of all, you know, how big is the market? What business, what size could we get in the first place? And the thing that frustrated us in particular in this market is there are so many old school players that actually give the particular software that we deliver, applicant tracking software, even a bad name, because these are companies 12, 15 year old. If you look at the software, I mean, Google the term applicant tracking software, go to the pictures and look at the average software that people are using. I mean, it just hurts your eyes. And we couldn't believe that. And we said, okay, there just needs to be, you know, this new Trello for hiring or whatever you want to call it, like in the intro, somebody that gets it and it should be used as a modern way of, like, you use Slack and use your modern tools. And we couldn't find that. We simply couldn't find that tool.
I see. You know what? So I'm looking now on Capterra. They have a list of competitors of yours, including IBM Kinexa. That's a thing?
Well, I think if you start Googling around for ATS software, you find...
The list is huge.
Probably hundreds of it.
Okay, and you're saying, look, all these guys are good, or were good at one point, but their software is just out of date. It doesn't feel modern.
Are we in the top 10 in your list? I'm comparing.
That's a good question. All right, you know what? Actually, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You're number 8 on their list. I looked at number 1. You know what? I can't tell. To me, I think your software is more approachable because it looks like the apps that I use today. And frankly, you guys did copy a little bit from Trello. Fair to say? To me, you guys look a little more approachable because it looks like, frankly, you copied a little bit from Trello, and I'm familiar with Trello. You look a lot like Pipedrive, our CRM, and I'm familiar with that. So I get it. So did you guys go in and look at all your competitors? Did you start doing demos? Did you say, hey, this is actually not approachable to us?
That's the first thing you do if you start. You start looking around, what's out there, what do people do? We did that a lot. We looked at tons of software. And you know what the conclusion was? Okay, we need to stop looking at competitors. And this is actually what I would advise a lot of startups. Do the research, get your position, get how you want to be different, etc. At some point, stop looking at them and worry about them when people actually start switching to competitors. Because this, look at all the categories at Capterra, it couldn't get more competitive than this industry. It's one of the worst places to start a business. I can assure you that. So if we're able to, within 2 years, get into the top 10 of Capterra, being this competitive gives a good feeling.
You know what, actually, Capterra is kind of tricky. I realize you're in the top 10 if I sort by sponsored. Then if I sort by highest rated, which is what I thought I would need, it's kind of weird because number 7 on the list has only one positive rating, or number 10 on the list has only one positive rating. And because it has positive rating, it has 100% love rate or something. And so it scores above others who are clearly more used. So I like Capterra, but I also find that it's a little bit tough to see what's what in there.
Right. Yeah.
But still, you know what? Let me say this. The fact that you think it's out of date, the fact that I think it's out of date, doesn't necessarily mean that there's a market for it. Did you do anything to see if users were finding it out of date? Did you do anything to talk to customers and say, hey, look at all these competitors. Are they working for you?
Hardcore, actually. We looked at job boards. We gathered, I think, 40,000 emails, phone numbers, people that were having jobs live at the moment. And we did it the hardcore, where we called, literally I called myself for hundreds of hours to ask it, because one of the criteria, I think I didn't mention it, is I want to know how to sell it and even have sold it before we start building it. So we looked at recruiters that were actually having jobs live at the moment, called them and said, hey, we want to launch something new. This is the idea. Would this be something that you're willing to help testing? This is also something I would advise to other companies, because it gives you momentum. You hear no way more often than you hear yes, of course. But first of all, you learn how to redefine the pitch, and you get to know the questions why yes or no, why people would actually.
And they actually
help
took
us.
Your phone calls.
Well, of the Jesus, thousands of calls, 80% no. I mean, nobody wants to get
80% said,
call.
Dude, Perry, I don't know who you are. Leave me alone. I'm not looking for another sales call. And 20% took your call.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Oh, really? What was the harshest thing? What was the one that actually hurt your feelings, if you're open with me?
Well, come on. If you do cold calling, you hear all kinds of things like, you know, we don't want your call, shut up, or this won't work, or whatever. You get demotivated a lot. So you have to be a bit persistent when you start calling people.
Okay. All right. Let me take a moment here to take a break. And then when I come back, I'd like to hear from you what one or two things that you learned from these calls that you didn't know, because it's so easy to make these phone calls and have them just reinforce what you already believe. So let's hear what you didn't expect, what changed the product in a way that you wouldn't have been able to think of if you hadn't made those calls. But first, I've got to tell everyone about a company called HostGator. We needed somebody to host our website. And frankly, we said, hosting is kind of a solved problem. Let's just look for someone who could do it right and do it at a good price. And so we went to HostGator. And HostGator has these phenomenally low prices. If you go to hostgator.com/mixergy, they'll actually lower their prices by 50% or more. So we thought, all right, great, low prices, but I'm expecting that I'm going to have 1,000 people come to my website at the same time. I'm expecting that I'm going to need to really grow this new business big. And so we signed up for HostGator's baby plan, but we immediately called them up and we said, what's the best you got? And the best they had was, what is it even called? Where you get private server. Do you know what it's called, Perry? Where you basically they get in your own computer.
Dedicated cloud?
Dedicated server. Dedicated, right. So we had that. I paid for that. It wasn't very expensive, cheaper than their competitors. We have not had a single freaking glitch. We've had a glitch internally at the company, but not a single glitch with the hosting package. It just freaking works. I have my WordPress. It's installed. You can get WordPress installed with one click, and you can count on this business working and growing because it's built on HostGator. If you're starting out, go for the baby plans. They actually have something called a hatchling plan or a baby plan, really inexpensive, that will get you going. When you're ready to scale up, call them up and tell them. Tell them what you're trying to do and tell them what you're looking for, and I bet you they'll have it. How many times did we look at managed WordPress hosting? We paid companies hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for managed WordPress hosting, and then we realized HostGator's got that. They'll manage our WordPress. We looked at competitors who had dedicated servers. And we said, wait a minute, HostGator's got that too. So you could start with HostGator, get a really low price, and as you scale up your business, you can scale up with them. They've got everything, reasonable prices, and great service. And it just works. I've not had a single issue with this. And I'm really proud to say that we hosted our new business. It's called Bot Academy on HostGator. If you want to sign up, go to this special URL that I'm about to give you. Not only will you get a big discount, but they'll also know that you came through me and that I am here to take care of you guys as best that I can. Go to this URL. It's hostgator.com/mixergy. Think of that, Gator. hostgator.com/mixergy. All right. So what did you learn that you didn't expect?
Well, we wanted to start off with a plain applicant tracking view of just moving your candidates through the funnel of hiring. You make your own stages, you drag and drop people into the right slots. But people quite early on said, well, my problem is not really getting organizing candidates. They said, I need exposure of my job. So they said, I would need integration with job boards. I would need some exposure of the job to get people in the first place. And what we didn't know when we started researching that market is that the Netherlands, where we started the business, is a very fragmented market when it comes to job boards. So there are about 1,400 job boards in the Netherlands, from niches like aviation jobs, you know, but stewardesses to all kind of sales job boards, etc. And it turns out to be that the Netherlands somehow is a very, very particular country compared to the US, where if you have 20 job boards, you've got way the majority of all the exposure. So we had to, I guess, find the partners that could publish on these job boards. So quite early on down the road, we actually reached out to partners that do job advertising, and it's their main job to buy slots at all these job boards and then resell it for a discount. And if we didn't have to find those partners, that I guess it would have been way differently. So I'm glad that users pointed it out, and in one of the first version of the product, we actually included those job boards.
I see. I didn't even realize you're saying they're basically ad agencies, ad buying agencies that do nothing but go buy ads for their clients to help them recruit.
Right. Yeah. They get discounts up to 70%, and they give the client a discount. If we work with them, you know, everybody gets a little cut, and even the client that we have gets like a 30% price off the listing price. So still fairly happy. And then they also still have a little chunk of it. So
I see. So if I hire one of these agencies, I don't pay any more for the ads because I go through them. I actually pay less, and they get a cut of what I'm paying because their discount is so steep that it gives them space to do that. I see. And so exactly, That's what you discovered, that these are the big guys that you might want to work with. The other thing you discovered was, hey, software is not that – it's important to organize the recruits that you get, but placing ads on job boards might be even more important.
Yeah, I guess that we discovered there are a couple of type of customers, because one customer says, I have so many candidates, I need a software to organize the process. This is a luxury position, I guess, that particular brands have that are more well-known. But the majority of the customers actually struggles to, first of all, how do I position the brand? How do I make sure people want to work for me? And how do I, you know, either get people in via job ads, or can I source them on networks, et cetera? So we saw two type of companies and needed the software to adjust a little bit to serve both. You know, some might have to deal with thousands of candidates, and some actually are very happy if they have 10 or 20.
I see. What are some of the questions that led you to the best insight?
Well, recently as well, we've been, if we go to the more advanced tech companies and we look how they handle their recruitment. So for instance, we just organized an event in Amsterdam together with booking.com, which is located here in Amsterdam. And then we learn a lot from booking. If you talk to their recruiters, they have about 45 people who are dedicated on sourcing people. So it's their main target. They hire about 500-600 engineers a year, new engineers in Amsterdam. So you can imagine the machine that they've created to, you know, be effective in reaching out to people, making sure they like to move over. And the market is too small to hire 500 people in Amsterdam. So it all comes down to relocating those people, making sure they come live here, etc. Basically, whole families relocate because of their hiring needs. So we learn a lot from the effectiveness of the bigger brands and how they set up their sourcing and how they set up their analytics and how they improve the business.
Okay. And so then your co-founder went and built a minimum viable product based on what he heard. What were the key features based on all these issues that you heard that you felt like you had to include?
Well, the most important thing for us to have a view where you see in one overview your whole status of your recruitment, who is where in which part of the process, right? Who is new, who is in my first interview, second interview. We spend the most time on that design, making sure that, okay, if we promise to deliver something new, you know, we shouldn't come up with lists, or it should be very intuitive for either the first-time recruiter or the very advanced booking.com style recruiter. So we spend most time on the visual appealingness of the software. That was most important to us.
I see. And that's where it kind of looked like Pipedrive.
Yeah, actually, it's right. I guess it's because we've been using Pipedrive, Trello, HubSpot. I mean, we use all the tools ourselves. As I mentioned, we're a remote company, so we rely on these tools.
Yeah.
If we don't set up the right tools online, then basically there's no way for us to communicate effectively. So we're familiar with all these modern tools, and I guess that represents also in the design that we have. It's not that you copy them, it's just that there's a lot of research in what good-looking design is, and it tends to just funnel through the same type of stuff.
And the design, for anyone who doesn't know, is a series of columns. Each column represents a different step in the process of turning a stranger into a hire, right? And the whole team gets to look at this board and see where everyone is. In one glance, you get to see exactly where everyone is on the board by knowing how many people are in each column and where everyone is, what column they're in.
Right.
But it seemed like the bigger issue that people came to you with was not managing their candidates. It was actually placing ads. So why didn't you start with that? Why didn't you start with one tool that places ads in multiple locations and then make the next step this board?
Not necessarily. I think it was a bit of both. We wanted to focus on the process first because we thought, okay, there are multi-posters, and it's called multi-posting if you want to distribute your job at multiple tenders at once. So we figured we've seen those already, and they're also, people could post manually to the site. So charging people $49.99 or a couple hundred dollars a month for just posting, it doesn't feel like a true service for us that we could relate to. For us, it's more about the process of your recruitment and also the emailing part, the scheduling part, etc. that we figured people would actually spend some money on if we could help them get organized and save some time. So I guess it was more about the process part than the job posting part for us.
And you were seeing both of them as issues.
Yeah, definitely.
Equally painful for people.
No, not equally painful.
What was more painful?
The organizing process.
The organizing. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So earlier when I was asking you what didn't you expect, it was that there were a lot of job boards and job boards were important. It's not that that was more painful. It's just that that was an additional issue that you hadn't thought of. I see. So you started out with the board. All right, your co-founder then created this board, and you told our producer, you know, frankly, it was kind of terrible. And you said, I didn't know how to tell him it was terrible. What was so bad about what he did?
Well, I don't know if you have seen design of a typical engineer, and Paul might be listening to this later, so I have to be careful with my words, but a typical engineer that designs is very practical. You could see this is definitely one of the most practical designs you could get, but if it's appealing to the eye, it's the second thing. I remember it was black and red, and it just had, you know, straight division of these are the functions, that's it. So I had to tell him politely, okay, this would be great to have a second opinion on some of the functions. Yeah.
And so you went to him and you said, hey, do you mind if I get a designer to come in here and just give us some feedback? And that's when you hired a designer to really reshape what he did.
Right. Yeah, we worked with a couple designers in our company Duran before. So we had one of the guys that we're actually still in the same office with. Not nowadays, but back then we shared the office with a couple companies. So we said to him, "Hey, could you take the initial idea and design and just tear it apart and give your own idea to it?" And he was the one that came up with the whole cards and dragging and dropping and all that stuff, actually. So
yeah. I see. I think the first time you guys launched it was 2014, right? This new design.
We started building design 2014, but we were still doing Geron back then, so it was a bit of a side project. So we didn't pick it up until the summer in 2015, actually.
I'm looking at your website from December 2014, the card view with all the columns where I could slide the card from one column to another. It just looks beautiful and it's easy to move. But it looks like even at that point, you already had a bunch of job boards built into the site, right?
Yeah, I think not sure if we already automated them, because it might have been that we also normally what we do with all the stuff is just start as lean as possible. So, you know, put it out there. Hey, it's available. Don't build it before actually people buy it. So typically we in the beginning also mentioned, hey, we have partnership with these job boards, we can post everywhere. In the beginning, it even was a manual process of someone actually going to the job board and posting it just to confirm, okay, people want it. And then when it happens 10 times, it's a sign of, okay, let's automate it. So
I see. So even though I'm looking at a demo here that shows that I could select which job boards my ads would go to, Indeed, jobbird.com, etc., that's not really working via the software. That would actually fire off a request to someone on your team, and you'd manually go and put their ads on those sites.
Not for all of them, because some have very easy APIs or XML features set up. So they just, you know, you push the jobs into the XML feed, they read it twice a day, and that's actually perfectly fine. That's also how companies like Indeed and LinkedIn work. So Indeed is set up in a couple of hours for the team. But the rather niche job boards, especially in the Netherlands, the ones that I mentioned that have been around for a long time, it's very tough to go back and forth with the team about XML feeds. So it would, in the beginning, was even quicker to have someone of a support team going to that site, placing the job, and just figuring actually out if people would want it in the first place, than to do it to automate every hundreds of job boards. Yeah,
I see. That makes sense. All right. How did you get your first customers?
Calling.
Yeah, you personally would cold call people.
I remember being at Rockstart Answers, and that was actually the point that we wanted to launch the MVP. And I said, how do I get 100 customers on this platform? Because we don't have money to spend on marketing yet. And somebody, the whole thing about Rockstart Answers is the whole audience gives an answer on the paper, and you have like 80 or 90 answers of people on the number one burning question. And one of the answers said, keep on calling until you have 100 customers. I thought, geez, it's so simple. Let's do it. So, we kept on calling until we had about 100 people that said, okay, I'll help you test this. I'll give you feedback.
That's a lot of calls, Perry. So 100 people were committed to testing it. Were they willing to pay?
That's a different thing.
I see. So you just got enough people to say, I'm willing to use it, not even to pay for it. And once you got 100, that's when you knew what. What were you going to do with that?
Yeah, that's good feedback, because then you have 100 people that are also feeling part of something that is new. So they provide a lot of feedback. I remember we launched it somewhere in 2015. And then we didn't have a paid plans, nothing. Like, it was just really an MVP. So by the end of 2015, we introduced the monthly plans and said, hey, we're going to charge money for it. We even asked all the people personally, what do you think is a fair pricing point? Tell us fairly. So some said, hey, this is very valuable, I'll pay $200 a month. Some said this is $10 a month. So you had to make a decision to start somewhere. And then you instantly lose about 70% of those free users, because they're not going to pay for it, actually. So that's a hard reality check at that point.
Were you starting to narrow down your audience or your target at that point? Did you say we're only going to focus on businesses, or only on ad buyers, or only on – was there anything of that?
We have a very wide range still today, actually. And the pricing starts at $19 a month, all the way up to a few K a month, depending on how many jobs you have live. So not depending on the amount of seats or something, but the only variable we look at when considering a pricing point, which is fair, is the amount of open jobs someone has. So that resulted in, first of all the industries you could get, and also all type of companies, from SMEs with one job to corporate users that we have on the platform with hundreds of jobs.
So when you were making all those phone calls and you had 100 people who said, yes, I will be your beta tester, they were all over the place. There was not one single focus for them.
No, they were all over the place.
In retrospect, yeah. Was that a mistake? Should you have focused on one type of person to create a product that satisfies them first before expanding to other areas?
Difficult question. I've been asking myself that as well. But if you're starting from a real bootstrap mindset, you're really glad to have customers on the platform, people that start paying for it. You know, every 1-2 customers feels like a little victory in the beginning. So I don't think we would have done it differently. Actually, I'm still very glad that we have this very wide scope. You know, we have a few K of customers nowadays, actually. And this actually forces you to think, how do I create something that is beneficial for all types of companies? So it might, you know, some might fall off because it's just not a niche product. It's very general. But I think we're comfortable there.
Okay. All right. So then when you were trying to sell these 100 people, what percentage did you say actually paid you?
Well, I remember it was something around 20, 30 people said, hey, I love it. I've been part of this. I'm willing to pay, which means that about 70% of that initial base, you know, just dropped off gradually over time.
That's painful.
Yeah, but it's also a tough market. I once read that IKEA, for all the worldwide product they're going to sell, is testing in Delft in the Netherlands with new products. Because they know of any market out there, Dutch are one of the pickiest ones when it comes to pricing. So if we're able to sell our furniture in the Netherlands, everything will work.
All right, let me take a moment here and tell people about someone who I met at dinner, a guy named Drew Gorham. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. When you meet people at dinner, you often don't ask for their last names. Anyway, he runs a company called The App Factory. And when he heard that Toptal was a sponsor of mine, he said that he used them. I said, how? We said, you know what? As a software consultant, I need to be able to say yes to projects, to great projects that come my way. But he says, look, if I close all these sales, I don't often have the specialized product teams that I need to satisfy what my clients are asking for. So he said that's why he works with Toptal. Toptal gives him the speed to scale up his product teams and meet his project load whenever he needs it. So he gets a new client. The client asks for a type of project that he's never done before. He says, no problem. I'll go to Toptal. Behind the scenes, he goes to Toptal and he says, Toptal, I need you guys to bring me these people into my team. And he knows that Toptal's extreme vetting process will ensure that he gets just the best people on his team. He believes that a great developer, is worth 10 times more than somebody who's just an okay developer. And so he likes that Toptal has their extreme vetting process. So these developers that he brings in from Toptal, or designers or other people that he brings in from Toptal, act as if they work for Drew. Their email addresses could say Drew's email address from the App Factory. They represent themselves as employees of Drew's company, and they work for Drew's clients. Project is done. They go back to do other things, and Drew does not have to keep paying them. It allows them to build a very flexible workforce for a company that has to deal with lots of different projects. He works with them. I think he's got a book about this called The App Factory. What's the name of the book? I thought it was called The App Factory. The App Factory Playbook. That's his book. But the process that he's talking about has been used by many other people. I had no idea about this before I used Toptal. I thought when I worked with a development shop that all their people were full-on employees. It turns out that in many cases, they're actually Toptal people who are working behind the scenes as if they were employees of the company. So if you're running an agency and you can't bring in every single person that you need to handle every single project that you take on, you should know Toptal is a resource. And frankly, if you are out there and you need to beef up your development staff, and you sure, by the way, that Perry, that these guys are not competitors with you? You're okay with me talking about them in this interview?
No, all
huh?
good. No worries, yeah.
All right. If you guys are out there and you need to bring in developers or designers, you should know that many of the design companies and development shops that you're working with already work with Toptal, so you should consider working with them too. Good news for you. Just like Perry, Toptal is created by 2 Mixergy fans who are just like Perry the fact that they've been listening to Mixergy. And so they're offering Mixergy listeners something they're not offering anyone else, and that is 80 hours of Toptal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, and that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Go check them out at toptal.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy. So you get, Perry, some real customers. It's actually bringing in some revenue. What is the next big thing that you did? Was it going up to bigger customers, or was it what happened on Product Hunt?
Yeah, Predator was a good example of getting some exposure online, which was for us the biggest challenge to get out there. So the first hire we did was Zhang, who was a content marketer, making blog articles, because from day one we wanted to focus on, okay, let's do something back to the community on everything we learned. So we built job description templates. I think by now we have over 400 landing pages of dedicated content. So the first step for us was, hey, let's get the name out there. We'll start thinking about what platform should we be on, what marketing channel should we work on, etc. So get exposure, I guess.
I see. And so how did you know what to write, what kind of templates to create? How did you even know the templates would work well? What was your process for coming up with good content marketing? Because I know that was a huge reason why you guys did well in the early days.
Sure. Well, everything also nowadays that we do comes often from clients. So we have little groups, like we make better groups of clients saying, hey, we're launching a new feature. Like now we're launching a new mailbox, for instance, in a couple of weeks. And then actually we call the clients that we know have a very close relationship with, and we tell them, hey, do you want to give feedback on the designs? We give them an invite to Envision, where we have all the designs uploaded. They literally comment on everything, like, hey, I would change the button, I would do differently, and what about this feature, is it in here, etc., which we did for the content as well. We asked people, hey, what would you like to, you know, read about, etc.
You'd go into your group and you'd say, what do you want to know? And they would give you feedback on what they'd want to know?
Yeah, right. We even send out a survey of, hey, these are the top 10 ideas we have. How would you rank it? What would you like us to write about? Yeah.
Huh. All right. I'm looking at your early blog post, 5 proven methods to improve talent sourcing. That was a typical type of post. And that would have come from feedback from your customers.
Yeah, funny. It still is today, actually. One of the biggest, like we organized.
That's one of your big blog posts even today.
Still a topic which we feel people want to be educated on, like, how do I source people, where do I find, you know, especially developers, like with TopTel as well. This is a real need, like real need of where do I find developers, how do I attract them, etc.
Here's one of my favorite ones. June 27th, 2015. Over 500 users of a recruitment software. Yippee. I love that. As I go back in time, I see these little milestones. Content was the first big winner for you, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What did you do to promote content? Because I feel like sometimes that becomes a whole job unto itself. You're supposed to promote your business, so you create content to promote your business. But then you have to promote the content that's supposed to promote your business. And you're in like two different businesses. You're a content creator and a content promoter while you're in the software business. What did you do to get that right without having it overwhelm your other business?
Sure, right. Well, nowadays it's two separate jobs, actually. We have people creating content and we have the other people distributing the content, thinking about, okay, where are people actually having discussions and where could people benefit from the content that we create. So it turned out to be separate jobs as we figured out. But initially, the first hire, Zhang, was doing both. He would spend half her time on creating the content, talking to customers, creating blog articles, also creating guest postings. And then spend the other half of her time on distributing the content, looking for channels, LinkedIn groups, Facebook groups, Quora groups, but also look at news channels that would benefit from a guest posting, etc. So she would also think on, okay, where could this actually end up and where people read this actually.
I see. And it was one person who got to do both. I think that we should get someone to do that. I see the value of it. Was there one channel, was it LinkedIn, that worked best for you guys?
Quora for us is still a channel that works well, because Quora. This is actually where people ask questions and you can honestly just help out and answer them.
Okay. All right. And then you told our producer one of the big growth points was when you started going after big clients. How did you go after big clients?
This actually went kind of natural, because I remember even Hudson Bay was entering the Netherlands. Actually, they are entering the Netherlands now. So they're hiring 1,800 people in 1 year. And they said, hey, we need a new software. And now we set up in the Netherlands. It's a good time to start from scratch and look at the tools out there and implement something new. So they actually wanted to have a new tool implemented. They looked at 2-3 options. We were one of the options. They came by in the office and they said, okay, we love your idea of the product and how it should integrate with all the tools we use, like Slack, etc. So there was a good match, and this was one of the bigger customers that we got initially. But actually, it started to get out there naturally, I would say, because if you look at startups initially and smaller companies, these companies looked at the startups.
So you guys did not have a sales team call on all these big customers. It was all inbound because of the content that you put out.
Yeah, we still have no sales team outbound at all.
I see. I had no idea. Product Hunt was actually a big source for you, apparently, of attention and customers. I'm looking at your Product Hunt page. You actually did really well for recruiting software, you know, not the kind of thing that every guy who's just like sitting at home looking for something new to play with could use. 323 upvotes on Product Hunt, lots of customer or user engagement in here. I get Product Hunt as a place to go and discover new software. Did you actually get people who are doing more than just discovering and voting on your software? Did they actually sign up? Did they become customers? Was it useful that way?
Yeah. I remember I got a call, I believe, at night from an Indian recruitment agency that said, I want to buy a year plan of your software. And they signed up on the spot for a year deal. I think it was about $2,000 at that point for a year plan, which if I look back, doesn't sound that much. But back then it was tremendous. So that was the first real commercial effect of Product Hunt. And I think it wasn't like hundreds of customers, but definitely maybe 10, 20 customers following that single post. Yeah.
You guys did something on Product Hunt that I wish other companies knew to do. You responded to every single comment on Product Hunt, even the ones that weren't so significant. Like this guy Rutger put up a post that said, this has a simplified dashboard with a great design. It's great. Cheers to the team of Recruity. I get the sense that maybe you guys are friends with him. But regardless, you responded. You said, thanks. We updated the dashboard just yesterday. Glad you like it. And I think it just shows that there's a real company that pays attention to users when you respond that way. All right. So thanks. I get why you'd get customers. People see the value of your software and they're actually seeing that you're engaged. And so they want to go and try it out. The thing that I'm surprised that you got was funding. You told our producer, hey, you know, this little round of funding that we did, it actually came because of Product Hunt. Tell me about how Product Hunt led to funding.
Yeah, it was funny actually because Product Hunt was live, I believe it was August or something like that. And then we got in touch with Robert Peisel and Luke Bruns, who were two seed investors actually. And we know them, or actually we didn't know them, but we got to know them via the Rockstart Network. So they were giving a workshop at Rockstart about their business, BeWise. They have created this software company, BeWise, together, which was sold in 2012 to NASDAQ, actually. And they were looking to reinvest in startups, and they heard about us, and we got to know each other. I think Robert even approached me at the event that they were hosting. And he said, yeah, I heard of you guys, and could we get in touch? And it was a nice buzz going around because of the Product Hunt posting. And it would just hit off because it was a good match between their experience of building a business, also taking the international, particularly the B2B side of the business, of course. They sold to Fortune 500 companies as well. So it just clicked, and it didn't take very long. I think it was a matter of weeks before we settled everything. We said, okay, let's start doing it together.
How much money did you guys raise? I see the post that you put up on your site on August 27, 2015, but you didn't say the amount.
No, we particularly agreed not to publish the amount because, didn't felt it was of value to publish that. Yeah,
but we're talking about hundreds of thousands, not millions of dollars at this point, right?
Well, we're talking about enough to really kickstart the business. Yeah.
Oh, so maybe not even hundreds of thousands.
If you're lean, it could be 5K, but no, it was enough to bring us to a point where we are today, actually.
You said to our producer, yeah, it's not about the money. It just changed our way of thinking and professionalized our sales and marketing. What happened when you guys got more professional with your sales and marketing?
Right. Yeah, it's true because also the input of Robert and Luke, who have built teams of tens of people or hundreds of people that are doing sales, you just start thinking about what type of people do I need to attract and, you know, how are they going to sell my business, and particularly need to learn going from a startup to a scale-up phase to let go and find people for the right spot to take on their responsibilities that you in the beginning all have on your plate. So I think this process of professionalizing going hand-to-hand with actual hiring, so I would say practice what you preach, is what we got a lot from the investors.
Be more
as well.
Specific. Who did you hire that you wouldn't have hired, or what role did you fill that you wouldn't have filled before?
Recently, like 6-7 months ago, we sit down with the team and said, hey, it makes a lot of sense for us to hire a chief commercial officer. I said initially, like, why? I mean, we're doing fine with the business, right? And they said, no, but to get, you know, someone focused on commerce, thinking about affiliate partners, resale shares, maybe much more than just sales. Because initially we wanted to call it head of sales. And then we sit down and they told me, like, hey, Perry, maybe it's not just head of sales. Maybe you should look for a chief commercial officer. So initially I thought, really, do we need to? And now that we hired Nils, who joined 6-7 months ago, I realized, wow, it's so valuable to have someone in the team dedicated on the commerce part that maybe I wouldn't have realized myself.
Okay. I see that this is all helping you. I see the change that's happening in your business. You also said, look, I had to go through a mindset. I was in a country that was dependent on other countries for trade. That affected the way that I was thinking. This is what you told our producer.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by you guys are affected by other countries for trade, and so your thinking is different from a U.S. entrepreneur because of that?
Well, not just me. I think it's indeed the nature of the landscape here in the Netherlands. It's because we've been part of the backcountry. A lot of our trades, you know, from the past decades have been going to Germany. So our economy very much relies around other countries around us. So you can also call it tradesmanship. That's kind of like in the roots of the entrepreneurship, I guess, in the Netherlands. And my grandfather's an entrepreneur, my dad's an entrepreneur, so they also have been involved in businesses, you know, in the European Union to do business with other countries and kind of rely on them. So I guess the mindset of an entrepreneur in the Netherlands is to think about how do I make partners and how do I set up an international connection to benefit in a rather small country. It's like 16 or 18 million people. So from day one, you have to think, how do I sell outside the country? Because it probably wouldn't survive on just the Netherlands alone. So
Perry, yeah, what I was saying was, that doesn't seem like an issue. That actually seems like a good thing, right? That you come from a mindset of creating partnerships. Your business needs partnerships to grow. I thought that you were telling our producer that's a challenge, but it sounds like it's not. That's actually a strong thing for you, isn't it?
I guess it is, yeah. But at the other hand, if you're talking to, for instance, investors in the Netherlands, which you happen to know via the Rockstar Network, they typically tend to think small inside the Netherlands or European Union, as in look for companies located here because you want to be next to a company that you invest in, which makes it hard to, for instance, think about, hey, we're actually active in 55 countries nowadays. So I wouldn't say we're a Dutch company even. I would prefer to call us a global company because, you know, this was one of the criteria. Let's focus on international business. And if we find partners, like if we find job boards, or for instance, it tends to localize in countries. So it could work against you, you know, if you want to have an international business, to have a local mindset. But yeah, we always wanted to do business from day one with countries abroad. Yeah.
What'd you do to create partnerships with countries, with companies abroad?
Right. Well, a lot of it followed naturally of the demand of customers. Like, for instance, you have customers in the U.S. that say, hey, do you also publish on U.S. job boards? So the team had to go on and make the partnerships, basically. I guess it's natural for the product, and that's also kind of how it develops. Like, people ask for it, and if you hear the same question 10 times, we reach out and set it up.
What do you do to keep track of all the things that people ask you? I've been kind of looking at Basecamp's site. And they have this process, it seems like, for being aware of the issues that people bring up on a regular basis. I know what it is. Basecamp's developers use Basecamp project management software to manage their company. They have Basecamp send out a question to all their tech support people every week that says, what issues came up this week often that you want to share with us? And so everyone gets that question. They all write the answer to it. And then in Basecamp, they get the answers to all these questions. And so they're aware of the big requests, the big needs that come up, and they could start to spot trends. Do you have a process like that that works for you for understanding what issues people have?
Makes sense. We even have a Trello board for it. We set up a Trello board that all the users have access for, and they can actually request features. They can see our roadmap even. They can comment on the roadmap. We actually invite them to be part of that discussion. We send out a newsletter twice a month, like, hey, we've updated the roadmap, this is coming. So we literally try to make the user part of the process by inviting them to join the discussion.
I thought I saw that, actually. I thought I saw a public...
Could be, yeah. Could be, actually, yeah.
A public Trello board. Let me see. Trello where anyone could see this stuff. Yeah, there it is, Recruity Roadmap on Trello. And so anyone can go in and see what your roadmap is. Visually collaborate, I see. Okay, so for example, you guys finished candidates list export. External recruiters access, give candidates view only. Slack integration, that one got 30 votes. I see, so anyone can see what's going on. Anyone can see what you guys are thinking of, and they could all go in and vote on it.
Right, yeah. I mean, you don't publish your whole roadmap, as in, you know, you have certain projects that you have in stealth mode, you know, that you're testing, experiments, but the stuff that's ready for the public, so you know, okay, this is something we need input on, you publish online. So
yeah, I see one. Q1 2018, there's something called stealth development colon big release, right? So you don't say what it is, but you're aware that it's coming up on the roadmap.
Yeah, yeah, but you do have a closed group of users that actually are part of that because you do need the input. So you've got maybe 20, 30 of hardcore users that are part of those type of projects, but it's just little experiment you run. And if it's successful, you put it on the public roadmap, you make everyone part of it. But you definitely need some kind of experiment area. Yeah.
What's this thing about scorecards? That has to do with the book Who, right?
Yeah, scorecards are very interesting because we've noticed the biggest struggle is how do you rate people? You know, and if a team of four or five recruiters go on and rate the same candidate, you even need a structured process of how to rate. So.
I see. And yeah. So you're creating that, and that's coming out Q4 2017.
Big one, yeah.
I get it. That's pretty cool. You mentioned that you come from an entrepreneurial background. Your dad was in the import-export business. What specifically did he import and export?
My grandpa was in the import-export business of the flower bulbs. This was where I come from, the area in the Netherlands. Pretty big. Like they used to create flowers and then export them to Germany or to Russia or to England even. My dad took over the business, but not the flower business. Back then, he turned it into a bowling alley, actually. So he took the whole fabric and he made it a bowling alley.
And so when you were growing up, your dad ran a bowling alley, and you told our producer that he would drag you along to every business meeting so that you could learn from it. Bank loans, meetings internally, the works. Is there one thing that you learned from all that you can still use today?
Yeah, I definitely. Like, I grew up in this bowling alley, and when I was a little kid, guess part of the business, you know, he took me to the meetings and also to networking events. For instance, I remember I was 15, little kid, going to network events with entrepreneurs who were 40, 50-year-old. But I guess you learn to just, people actually accept you, and entrepreneurs tend to be very open-minded to getting to know new people. So I feel very comfortable walking into a room where I don't know anybody, and it takes a matter of 5 minutes and you just start chatting to people. So that's a comfortable idea if you're in unknown territory.
Yeah, especially if you're going to call hundreds and hundreds of people asking them for feedback and asking them to be beta testers. I can see how that'd be helpful. I had no idea that bowling alley owners would need to network. Why would it need to network?
It started with a bowling alley. Then he added a restaurant, another restaurant. Then he started to buy property. He went into the property business. Then he started investing in companies. So it's a kind of a growing entrepreneurship that evolves all the time. So bowling alley was just the beginning. Yeah,
I see. And you got to watch all of that as it developed, be a part of it, and see how companies are built.
Yeah, and even do some stuff together. Like we often when he's investing in companies, I help him. You know, I assess the business plans, assess the entrepreneurs.
Wow. Did your dad invest in your business?
No.
Why not? He didn't invest in Recruity. He didn't believe enough in it.
No, he did believe in it, but I think it was a bit of an ego question, saying I can do it alone, like take family money and prove I could do it myself, I guess. Yeah.
All right. Are you guys close or are you competitive?
No, very close. I mean, we even do some business together. And when he looks at companies to invest in, I help out. I assess the business plan, the entrepreneurs, you know, we go to events together. Very close and very open. So he's also challenging me on a lot of fronts often. Pretty cool.
Got it. All right. Congratulations on the success of Recruity. It's basically spelled recruit with two E's at the end, right? Recruity.
Right. That's it.
Go check them out at recruity.com, of course. And the two sponsors that I mentioned are the site that will help you host your website. Go check out hostgator.com/Mixergy. And if you, like Drew, who I mentioned earlier, who I met at dinner, want to keep beefing up your agency, go check out TopTal. They have an extreme vetting process, and you could get a great deal on working with them if you go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Top is on top of your head. talesandtalent.com/MixerG. All right, Perry, thanks so much for doing this interview.
Cool. Great. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thanks. Bye, everyone.